Sukadamayam Dadatisa Panantikam Vansa Kapatu Vyasta Kripasindu Vaivacha Patitanam Bhavadevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namah. These prayers of that Lord Shiva is teaching the Prachetas are very powerful. In the first section, and he's drawing fairly close to the conclusion now. In the first section, we heard Lord Shiva offer his obeisances to the Lord, Lord Narayan, Lord Shankarshan, Padumya, Aniruddha, and Vasudev, who have so many functions in relationship with the material world. They are the, in one sense, they are the controllers of the material world. No one in this world is a controller, nor are the demigods the controllers, but it's actually these four who are the controllers. And ultimately, of course, Sarvakarana Karanam. Krishna is the ultimate supreme controller. He is the only one who is independent. But Lord Shiva offers his obeisances to these four personalities of Godhead, the quadruple expansion of the Lord, as Prabhupada called them, the Chaturvyuha in Sanskrit. And then he described the beauty of that Lord after describing the functions of the Lord. And he wished to see the Lord. Oh no, first before, let's see. Then he described what the Lord does, how he is the one who is to be worshipped by the Vedas. He's the object of the Vedas, the bestower of benedictions. He's the heir. He's the creator of the material world. And he offers obeisances again and again to the Lord in all the different forms by which he pervades and supports the material world. He says the Lord is death. Why is the Lord death? Because it's unstoppable. Despite everyone's endeavor to stop death, no one since the beginning of time has been able to stop death. Although we don't think minute to minute, hour by hour, or day by day, or month to month, or even year by year, that we will have our time too. We hear that such and such died, and this one died, and we sort of forget that we will have our moment where we too will die. It's unstoppable. It's unstoppable, regardless of what anyone wants. So who is forcing this upon everyone? How powerful that person is. If someone walked in here right now, and started, just didn't somebody from the street, and started walking away with the harmonium, we would stop him. He doesn't have the power to take it. And then, it's the tape. Yeah, you know what you have to do? Stop it and tap it. Well, it may work. Sometimes force is necessary in this world. So that the law of death, like the law of old age, like the law of disease and the law of birth, it's unstoppable. It's being empowered. These forces are empowered by Krishna. And he says the inclinations and disclinations that everyone has, that's also Krishna. And we think ourselves independent, but we're dependent at every moment. So he's offering his obeisances to Krishna in all these different ways, the topmost bestower of all benedictions. Everyone is wanting benedictions. So he is the topmost bestower of those benedictions, and he can also bestow the topmost benediction. So again and again, he has a brain which is never checked in any condition. His mind, his desire, he has something called an Icha Shakti. That means just by his desiring, everything happens. And therefore, again and again, Lord Shiva offers his obeisances into that Lord, the supreme controller of the body, the mind, the senses. He's called Rishikesh. So then he, after paying his obeisances to these, all the way that the Lord exhibits his power, his potency, he then describes that Lord. Because when we think of someone who has so many multi-powers, it's hard to think of what he looks like. So he describes the beauty of the Lord with his forearms and his attractive smile, etc. And then, after describing the beauty of the Lord, and as we read yesterday, he described how to be with that Lord, how to know that Lord, how to achieve Him. And that is by serving Him with great devotion. And that itself, so he glorifies serving the Lord with great devotion, and then he glorifies the devotee who carries that devotion to the Lord. And in this way, we've reached the center of the prayers of Lord Shiva, glorifying devotional service. After glorifying the Lord and His power, He glorifies devotional service. And in these verses, the next set of verses from approximately 60 to 66, Lord Shiva describes that Lord in a different way and how He manifests Himself, His potencies, because he's first of all he's describing the Lord from the point of view of Lord Shiva, who is dealing basically with the material world, and he's also describing, because this is the fourth canto of the Bhagavatam, he's describing to us, because we've heard about the Lord as the Creator, and He's so powerful, and we've heard that He has given the benediction to Dhruva Maharaj. He's given benedictions to Brahma. We've heard these things. And we've heard so many times about the creation of the material world. So now we're going to hear more of the potencies or how the Lord manifests Himself. My dear Lord, this is text 60. My dear Lord, the impersonal Brahman spread everywhere like the sunshine or the sky. Spreads everywhere like the sunshine or the sky. And that impersonal Brahman, which spreads throughout the universe and in which the entire universe is manifest, is you. So there is an impersonal aspect of the Lord. And that aspect of the Lord is that which the entire material creation rests upon. It rests upon the impersonal. So in that sense, the impersonalists, they are quite correct. Because everything in the material world, savam idam kala brahman, sarva kala vidam brahman, that everything is this brahman. It rests upon the brahman. And when it is looked at in the greatest depths that it can be seen, it can be seen as Brahman or spiritual. But that is Krishna. Brahmano hi pratishtaham. That Brahman rests upon Krishna. And it is his energy, as the sunlight is the energy of the sun. So everything rests upon him. Him. The person, Krishna. So how powerful is that person? He is the source of everything. Because it is necessary to know these things, because before we can love Krishna, we have to understand who he is. And then, when our love is fully developed, we can forget the power that is his. Or rather, let the power of Krishna be overwhelmed by the love someone has. The knowledge of the power will get in the way of someone's love for Krishna at some point. But certainly for ourselves, and in the fourth canto of the Bhagavatam, we have to have that veneration to Krishna, because we have to stop thinking ourselves as independent. And we have to stop thinking of ourselves as controllers and enjoyers. And we have to stop looking at the world as if it is meant for us and our pleasure. So therefore we have to see, who is capable of gaining pleasure from the material world? Who is capable of controlling the material world? It's not us. We have to see, because before one can enjoy, one has to be able to control. And before one can control, one has to have power. And our power is so limited compared to the material world even. Text 60. That was the verse that he is. The Brahman is him. Brahmanohi pratishtaham amritasya vyasya. Sukha saikantikasya cha. Purport. In Vedic literature, it is said that everything is Brahman and nothing else. The whole cosmic manifestation rests on the Brahman effulgence. The impersonalist, however, cannot understand how such a huge cosmic manifestation can rest upon a person. So they see everything resting upon this Brahman energy. And they cannot, no one, practically speaking, can understand how that Brahman, or rest rather, upon Krishna, that Krishna's Parabrahman, because it is inconceivable. Thus, this inconceivable power of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is not understood by the impersonalists. Therefore, they are puzzled and always deny that the Absolute Truth is a person. This wrong impression is cleared by Lord Shiva himself, who says that the impersonal Brahman, which is spread all over the universe, is nothing but the Supreme Lord himself. Here it is clearly said that the Lord is spread everywhere, just like the sunshine, by virtue of his Brahman feature. This example is very easy to understand. All the planetary systems are resting upon the sunshine. Yet the sunshine and the source of the sunshine are aloof from the planetary manifestations. Similarly, the sky or air is spread everywhere. Air is within a pot, but it also touches filthy places and sanctified places alike. In any case, the sky is uncontaminated. It doesn't come in contact with the things composed of grosser matter. And in the other example, the sunshine also touches filthy places and sanctified places, and both are actually produced by the sun. But in any case, the sun is aloof from all filthy things. Similarly, the Lord exists everywhere. There are pious things and impious things. But in the Shastras, the pious things are described as the front of the Supreme Lord, whereas impious things are described as the back of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In Bhagavad Gita, the Lord clearly says, Mayitamidam sarvam jagadavyaktamurtina matstani sarvabhutani nacham teshvavastita. By me and my unmanifested form, this entire universe is pervaded. All beings are in me, but I am not in them. This verse of the Bhagavad Gita explains that the Lord is spread everywhere by virtue of his Brahman feature. Everything rests in him, yet he is not there. The conclusion is that without bhakti yoga, without rendering devotional service to the Lord, even an impersonalist cannot understand the Brahma Tattva, the Brahman feature. In the Vedanta Sutra it is stated, Atato Brahma Gigyasa. This means the Brahman Paramatma, or Brahma, Parabrahman, should be understood. This is the purpose of human life, to get knowledge of Brahma. In Srimad Bhagavatam also, the Absolute Truth is described as the one without a second. But he is realized in three features: impersonal Brahman, localized Paramatma, and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is the ultimate issue. And in this verse, Lord Shiva confirms that ultimately the Absolute Truth is a person. He clearly says, Tattvam Brahmaparam Jyotir Akasham Eva Vistritam. Here is a common example. A successful businessman may have factories and offices, and everything rests on his order. If someone says that the entire business rests on such and such person, it does not mean that the person is bearing all the factories and offices upon his head. Right? Everything rests on him, but it's not that, not literally that he's carrying it, it's on his body like that, or on his head. Rather, it is understood that by his brain or his energetic expansions, by his potency, by his power, the business is running without interruption. Similarly, it is the brain and energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead that carries on the complete manifestation of the material and spiritual worlds. The philosophy of monism, explained here very clearly, adjusts itself to the fact that the supreme source of all energy is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. This is described very clearly. Next verse, 61. So Krishna is that Brahman. The Brahman is his energy. And the material world rests on the Brahman. And again, Brahmanohi Pratishtaham. And that Brahman rests upon Krishna. My dear Lord, you have manifold energies. And these energies are manifested in manifold forms. So many energies, and from the energies come so many forms in the material world. So there's the Brahman energy, and from this Brahman is manifest so many forms. With such energies, you have also created this cosmic manifestation. And although you maintain it as if it were permanent, you ultimately annihilate it. So Krishna causes the creation, maintenance, and annihilation. That which the material energy rests upon, and the universe, the cosmos, creation, maintenance, destruction, all is coming from Krishna's energies. Although you are never disturbed by such changes and alterations, because that's the very nature of the material world. It is always shifting and changing. The time factor, which is another of Krishna's potencies, the potency of the Paramatma, is forcing the material creation onward. You maintain it, although as if it was permanent. You ultimately annihilate it. Although you are never disturbed by such changes and alterations, the living entities are disturbed by them. Ultimately, no one likes the disturbances of life, the changes. Imperceptibly or quickly, everything is changing in the material world, very disturbing. The living entity is disturbed by this very nature of the material world because he seeks something stable, something secure. Secure means stable. Stable means secure. He seeks that. Something he can rest assuredly upon, and he does not find it in the realm of matter. So he's disturbed. But the Lord, he is not disturbed by all this. And therefore, the living entity is disturbed by all the changes and alterations. They find the cosmic manifestation to be different or separated from you. My Lord, you are always independent, and I can clearly see this fact. And Lord Shiva is describing this from the purport on the following page. The eternally free living entities are called Nitya Mukta, for they never come in contact with the material energy. However, some living entities are conditioned in this material world, and thus they think themselves separated from the Supreme Lord. Due to their contact with the material energy, their existence is always troublesome. Being always in distress, the conditioned soul considers the material energy to be very much disturbing. This fact is explained by the Vaishnava kavi or poet Krishna Buddhiste Jivanadiya Bahimukh Attaiva Mayatare Samsadeya Samsadeya Samsarara Duk. When the living entity forgets the Supreme Lord and wants to enjoy himself independently, imitating the Supreme Lord, he is captured by the false notion that he is the enjoyer and is separated from the Supreme Lord. The material energy is therefore very much troublesome to the spiritual energy, the living entity. But the material energy is never troublesome to the Supreme Lord. Indeed, for the Supreme Lord, both material and spiritual energy are the same. In this verse, Lord Shiva explains that the material energy is never troublesome to the Supreme Lord. The Supreme Lord is always independent, but because the living entities are not independent, due to their false idea of becoming independently happy, the material energy is troublesome. Consequently, the material energy creates differentiation. Differentiation. What differentiation does it create? Anyone catch what Prabhupada said on that? What differentiation does it create?
Duality?
Yeah, but what specifically is the duality? Yes. We are not connected to Krishna. That duality. And it is caused by this tendency to enjoy. And because we can't be in that position while understanding our relationship with Krishna and our consciousness, we cut that, we forget it. Krishna bhule se jeev, turning our back on Krishna. This living entity, bhule means forgets. Living entity forgets, forgetting Krishna, the jiva, since forever, practically speaking, has turned his back on Krishna, bahimukh. And ataeva means therefore, maya tare, deha maya, gives him samsareta duk, the unhappiness of repeated birth and death. But Krishna is above it all, just like the sun is above the clouds, although the living entity may be covered by the clouds. His vision of the sun may be blocked and he may be in darkness due to the presence of the clouds, but the sun is never actually covered by the clouds. It's the eyes of the living entity that are covered. So being always distressed, the conditioned soul considers the material energy to be very much disturbing. Because the Mayavadi philosophers cannot understand this, they want to be relieved from the material energy. However, because a Vaishnava philosopher is in full knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he finds no disturbance even in the material energy, because that's quite amazing. The Mayavadis get disturbed, the impersonalists become disturbed by the material energy, and therefore, even though they are transcendentalists, they are disturbed. But because the devotee, Krishna Bhakti Nishkama Ta Eva Shanta Bhakti Mukti Siddhi Kami Shakali Ashanta, the devotee is peaceful because he has no desires. He just accepts whatever Krishna gives him. He accepts whatever happens as Krishna's mercy. This is wonderful. He doesn't fight with Krishna. So therefore, he is very peaceful even in the material world, and because he's so deeply connected to Krishna and seeing, experiencing Krishna and all that occurs, practically speaking, he's not in the material world. This is transcendental consciousness, fully transcendental. So the Vaishnava has no disturbance even in the material energy. This is because he knows how to utilize the material energy for the service of the Lord. That doesn't just mean using the pieces of wood and the wires and the material of the material world. No, but it means all material occurrences. He uses those also in the service of Krishna. So he knows how to use the material energy for the service of the Lord. In the government, the criminal department and civil department may appear different in the eyes of the citizens. But in the eyes of the government, both departments are one and the same. The criminal department is troublesome for the criminal, but not for the obedient citizens. Similarly, this material energy is troublesome for the conditioned souls, but it has nothing to do with the liberated souls who are engaged in the service of the Lord. So that Brahman and the cosmos, the energy of the cosmos, this is all, both of them are Krishna's manifestations. Text 62. Now further, all the forms of the Lord in the material world, the powers of the material world, the demigods are also manifestations of Krishna. My dear Lord, Lord Shiva says, your universal form, the Vishwarup, consists of all five elements, the senses, the mind, intelligence, false ego, which is material, and the Paramatma. Your partial expansion, who is the director of everything, the Paramatma, who is your partial expansion, the director of everything. Yogis, other than the devotees, namely the Karma Yogis and Jnana Yogis, worship you by their respective actions and their respective positions. So the yogis, jnanis, karmis, they're ultimately worshipping Krishna according to what their realizations are. So everyone is worshipping Krishna in that way. It is stated both in the Vedas and in the Shastras, that are the corollaries of the Vedas, that indeed, and indeed everywhere, that it is only you who are to be worshipped. That is the expert vision of all the Vedas. So they're all worshipping Krishna, as the Bhagavad Gita describes. They are worshipping Krishna, but avidipurvakam. The demigod worshippers, they are worshipping Krishna because it is Krishna's power. Just like the light in this room, it is not giving off its brightness independently, but there's a connection that is allowing it to exhibit so much brightness. So if a primitive just came from the forest and coming to the great civilization of Perth for the first time, and he walks in and he may not have seen an electric light before, and he may think it's the most wonderful thing. But it is not the light bulb that is wonderful. Even though the light is coming from the bulb, it is the connection that gives it its wonder. So similarly, the demigods are connected to Krishna. They're empowered by Krishna. So who is the wonderful one? He's supplying so many light bulbs, electricity. So he is the most powerful. He is the source of all power. So the demigods and the demigod worshippers, the demigods are getting their power from Krishna, the demigod worshippers are worshipping Krishna ultimately, the jnanis are worshipping Krishna ultimately, they're worshipping the impersonal Brahman. So only it is Krishna who is worshipable. Nothing is separate from him. Text 63. And this, the purport here, and we'll read half of it, the first half of it, this summarizes this section that we've been reading. My dear Lord, you are the only Supreme Person, the cause of all causes. Before the creation of this material world, your material energy remains in a dormant condition. When your material energy is agitated, the three qualities, namely goodness, passion, and ignorance act. And as a result, the total material energy, egotism, ether, air, fire, water, earth, and all the various demigods and saintly persons become manifest. Thus the material world is created. All from Krishna. Purport. So basically what we just heard were the different elements in these verses we just read, were the more or less the different elements of creation, none different from Krishna. So we naturally, we see the wonderful creation and there are aspects of it that awe us. When we look at anything very deeply, it's so awe-inspiring. Even a flower, we pass 100 flowers a day. But one flower is so incredible, how it comes from a seed and is so fragrant and so symmetrical, such a work of art. So many artists paint pictures of flowers in their own style and they're sold for hundreds and hundreds of dollars, sometimes thousands of dollars. Because it is wonderful. The human body is wonderful. Fibers that plants are made out of are wonderful. The way that a plant works, an animal works, a moth works, a slater works, a mosquito works, it's all inconceivable. It's all wonderful. So all this wonder comes from the supreme wonder, who is the cause of all causes. His creation, the creation rests upon his intelligence and his energy, it was said. So you are the only supreme person, Lord Shiva says, the cause of all causes. Before the creation of the material world, your material energy remained in a dormant condition within you. When your material energy is agitated, the three qualities, goodness, passion, ignorance, act, and as a result, the total material energy, egotism, ether, air, fire, water, earth, and all the various demigods and saintly persons become manifest. Thus the material world is created all from you, and you're a person. By our own intelligence, we cannot understand this. The Lord is a person. He's a person with qualities, characteristics, likes, dislikes, form. Prabhupada's purport. If the whole creation is one, that is nothing but the Supreme Lord or Vishnu, then why do the expert transcendentalists make such categories as is found in the above verse? Why do learned and expert scholars distinguish between matter and spirit if everything is one, coming from Krishna? In answer to these questions, Lord Shiva says that spirit and matter are not creations of various philosophers, but are manifested by Lord Vishnu as described in this verse. Tvam eka adya purusha. Spiritual and material categories are made possible by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But actually, there are no such distinctions for the living entities who are eternally engaged in the service of the Lord. There is only the material world for those who want to imitate the Lord and become enjoyers. Indeed, the material world is nothing but the forgetfulness. The material world is nothing but the forgetfulness of the original Supreme Personality of Godhead, the creator of everything. The distinction between matter and spirit is created by the sleeping energy of the Lord when the Lord wants to give some facility to those living entities who want to imitate the Lord in his enjoyment. It is only for them that this material world is created by the dormant energy of the Lord. For instance, sometimes children want to imitate their mother and cook in the kitchen. And at such a time, the mother supplies them with some toys so that the children can imitate her cooking. Similarly, when some of the living entities want to imitate the activities of the Lord, this material cosmic manifestation is created for them by the Lord. The material creation is therefore caused by the Lord through his material energy. It is by the glance of the Lord that the material energy is activated. At that time, the three material qualities are set into motion and the material energy is manifested first in the form of the Mahatattva, then egotism, then ether, then air, fire, water, and earth. After the creation, the living entities are impregnated in the cosmic manifestation and they emerge as Lord Brahma and the seven great rishis, and then as different demigods. From the demigods come human beings, animals, trees, birds, beasts, and everything else. The original cause, however, is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as verified herein. Tvam Eka Adya Purusha. You are the original and the only person. So the creation is the Lord, done by Him to give facility to the souls. Then what happens? My dear Lord, after creating by your own potencies, you enter within the creation in four kinds of forms. That means, as the purport, Prabhupada in the purport describes, that Krishna, along with the living entity, Krishna enters as the super soul, and there's four different types of birth that the living entities take. As Svetaja, Jarujaja, Andaja, Ubija, as seeds, embryos, eggs, and within perspiration. So after creating by your own potencies, you enter within the creation in four kinds of forms. Being within the hearts of the living entities, you know them and know how they're enjoying their senses. The so-called happiness of this material creation is exactly like the bee's enjoyment of honey after it has been collected in the honeycomb. So the Lord enters within all living entities in their heart after the creation. Before, we just heard in the previous verses, we heard how the Lord manifested the elements of the creation, and then the living entities enter in the creation, and then the Lord enters within the living entities. And what do the living entities do? They act like bees trying to enjoy honey, spending their energy collecting honey so that they can enjoy it. So this is basically what the material world is. It's living entities, the super soul, and the material energy. Aparyadam idastvaram prakritim virimekram jiva bhuta mahabaho dayate jagat yedam dayate jagat. So Prabhupada's purport is quite interesting. We'll read the second half of it. Remaining within the hearts of all living entities, the Lord bestows remembrance by which the living entities can enjoy certain things. Thus the living entity create their enjoyable honeycombs and then enjoy them. The example of the bees is appropriate. Living entities, every living entity is compared to a bee. Why? Because the example of the bees is appropriate because when bees try to enjoy their honeycomb, which they work so hard to collect, they have to suffer the bites of other bees. Because bees bite one another when they enjoy honey, they are not exclusively enjoying the sweetness of the honey, for there is also suffering. In other words, the living entities are subjected to the pains and pleasures of material enjoyment. Whereas the Supreme Personality of Godhead, knowing their plans for sense enjoyment, is aloof from them. In the Upanishads, the example is given of two birds sitting on a tree. One bird, the jiva, or living entity, is enjoying the fruits of the tree. And the other bird, Paramatma, is simply witnessing. In the Bhagavad Gita 13.23, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as Paramatma is described as Upadrashta, the overseer, and the Anumata, the permitter. Thus the Lord simply witnesses and gives the living entity sanction for sense enjoyment. It is the Paramatma also who gives the intelligence by which the bees can construct a hive, collect honey from various flowers, store it and enjoy it. I remember when I was in the university in a psychology class, there was, I can't remember the person's name, but there was a description of a study that someone had made that described the the language of the bees, how they communicate to each other. They build the hive, and then they send out certain bees, and they find out where there's some honey. And then the ones who went out, who as the scouts, they communicate in particular ways by their movements and dancing where that honey is, so that the other bees know where it is and they can collect it too. So it's so organized, so incredibly organized. So this intelligence to be able to do that is given by Krishna. He gives the intelligence by which bees can construct a hive, collect honey from various flowers, store it, and enjoy it. Although the Paramatma is aloof from the living entities, he knows their intentions, and he gives them facilities by which they can enjoy or suffer the results of their actions. Human society is exactly like a beehive, for everyone is engaged in collecting honey from various flowers or collecting money from various sources and creating large empires for common enjoyment. However, after these empires are created, the bites of other nations have to be suffered. Sometimes nations declare war upon one another, and the human beehives become sources of misery. Although human beings are creating their beehives in order to enjoy the sweetness of their senses, they are at the same time suffering from the bites of other persons or nations. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is Paramatma, simply witnessing all these activities. The conclusion is that both the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the jivas enter into the material world. However, the Paramatma, or Supreme Personality of Godhead, is worshipable because he has arranged for the happiness of the living entity in the material world. Because it is the material world, no one can enjoy any kind of happiness without inebriety. Material enjoyment means inebriety, whereas spiritual enjoyment means pure enjoyment under the protection of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So therefore, Krishna is doing all this, and one naturally asks, well, I don't see him. How can I experience God in the world? Next verse. My dear Lord, your absolute authority cannot be directly experienced. Not directly experienced. How Krishna is doing things and that his law is unbreakable. He enforces it upon the universe, including the living entities. So it cannot be directly experienced, but one can guess by seeing the activities of the world that everything is being destroyed in due course of time. Whether we like it or not. The force of time is very strong, and everything is being destroyed by something else. Just as one animal is being eaten by another animal, time scatters everything, exactly as the wind scatters clouds in the sky. Purport. The process of destruction is going on according to the law of nature. Nothing within this material world can be permanent, although scientists, philosophers, workers, and everyone else are trying to make things permanent. One foolish scientist recently declared that eventually life will be made permanent through science. Some so-called scientists are also trying to manufacture living entities within the laboratory. Thus, in one way or another, everyone is busy denying the existence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and rejecting the supreme authority of the Lord. However, the Lord is so powerful that he destroys everything in the form of death. A little further down. In this way, the process of destruction goes on by the supreme will of the Lord. Although we don't see the hand of the Lord, Supreme Lord, directly, we can feel the presence of that hand through the Lord's process of destruction. We can see the clouds scattered by the wind, although we cannot see how this is being done because it is not possible to see the wind. So some things we only recognize by their effect, we don't see directly. So the wind is moving the leaves, the trees, the clouds. the papers through the streets when it is blowing. Sometimes it'll, when the wind really, really blows and there's a hurricane, it may even rip up, move a car or something like that, or rip off a house, the top of a house, or flatten some trees. But you don't see the wind itself. So we can see the clouds scattered by the wind, although we cannot see how this is being done because it is not possible to see the wind. Similarly, although we do not directly see the Supreme Personality of Godhead, we can see that He controls the process of destruction. The destructive process is going on fiercely under the control of the Lord, but the atheist cannot see it. So we know the thing is known by its effect. So why does this all go on? What places the living entity under this destructive force of time? And it's also interesting that earlier, because Lord Shiva is the destroyer, so he's speaking very much on this topic. He's the Rudra principle, the destroyer principle. And he also is the one, he's the controller of the false ego. So those who have false egos are under the control of Lord Shiva, which means under the control of his destructive principle. And that is done through the Lord's potency of time. So what places the living entity under this force of time? And again, it's very interesting that earlier on in Lord Shiva's prayers, he said, what is the result of taking shelter of that Lord in devotional service? One will escape this influence of time. Everyone nowadays, almost everyone, actually it's amazing that there's people in this room who don't wear watches. So many, it's incredible. Oh, you took yours off, okay. Do you have yours on, Jagatwini? Okay. You don't have one, you don't have one. You have one? Usually everyone, every single, but you don't have one, right? You have one? Was that a yes or a no? You have two. No. But everyone is so conscious of time. Why? Because they want to use their time properly, don't want to waste time so they can exploit them. Who is actually conscious of what time is doing to them? Everyone's so conscious of time and wearing it around their wrists to remind them, but no one is conscious of what they're being conscious of. It's killing them. So it's so ironical the way it works. Everyone's conscious of it, but everyone's unconscious of it completely. That the seconds are ticking away. I'm 1 second closer to death. The body's going to die. What should I do? Oh, the scientists have promised me then I won't die in the future. So what places the living entities under this control of time? We've heard from Lord Shiva how to get out, devotional service. Text 66. My dear Lord, all living entities within this material world are mad after planning for things. And they're always busy with a desire to do this and that, therefore the wristwatch. This is due to uncontrollable greed. The greed for material enjoyment is always existing in the living entity. But your lordship is always alert. And in due course of time, you strike him, just as a snake seizes a mouse and very easily swallows him. Everyone is greedy, and everyone makes plans for material enjoyment. In his lust for material enjoyment, the living entity is described as a madman. So this is actually very heavy. But it just gets worse and worse in the rest of the canto. It's so heavy. Paranjana. What's the purpose of all the heaviness? What is it supposed to do in our consciousness? What is it supposed to bring up?
Wake us up.
Wake us up. Yes. To what?
Life.
To life, yes. Yeah, but this is when it's talking so heavily and negatively of time crushing, etc. Yeah, it's supposed to bring some detachment to us. And This is the prelude. Next, Paranjana, great detachment. So get ready. So everyone is more or less greedy and mad. Prakriti kriyamanani gunai kamani sarvasha hankara vimudatma kattaham iti manyate. The bewildered spirit soul, under the influence of the three modes of material nature, thinks himself to be the doer of activities which are in actuality carried out by nature. Everything is enacted by the laws of nature, and these laws are under the direction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The atheists or unintelligent men do not know this. They are busy making their own plans, and big nations are busy expanding their empires. And yet we know that in due course of time, many empires have come into existence and have been destroyed. Many aristocratic families were created by people in their extreme madness. But we can see that in the course of time, those families and empires have all been destroyed. But still, the foolish atheists do not accept the supreme authority of the Lord. Such foolish people unnecessarily cannot concoct their own duties without referring to the supreme authority of the Lord. The so-called political leaders are busy making plans to advance the material prosperity of their nation. But factually, these political leaders only want an exalted position for themselves. Due to their greed for material position, they falsely present themselves as leaders before the people and collect their votes, although they are completely under the grip of the laws of material nature. These are some of the faults of modern civilization. Next verse. My dear Lord, so it's due to the greed of the living entity that Krishna awaits like the snake awaiting the mouse in the form of time. My dear Lord, text 67, this is the more or less the conclusion. My dear Lord, any learned person knows that unless he worships you, his entire life is spoiled. Knowing this, how could he give up worshiping your lotus feet? Even our father and spiritual master, Lord Brahma, unhesitatingly worshipped you, and the 14 Manus followed in his footsteps. This is Lord Shiva speaking. 68. My dear Lord, all actually learned persons know you as the Supreme Brahman and the Supersoul. Although the entire universe is afraid of Lord Rudra, who ultimately annihilates everything, for the learned devotees, you are the fearless destination of all. My dear sons of the king, because Lord Shiva is saying this to the Pachetas, just execute your occupational duty as kings with pure hearts, with a pure heart. Just chant this prayer, fixing your mind on the lotus feet of the Lord. That will bring you all good fortune, for the Lord will be very much pleased with you. So we'll stop here. We'll read the purports. From these verses, these last three verses, read some purports from them in the next class, and if Krishna allows, we'll also finish this chapter. This is quite a long chapter. Thank you very much. Any questions, comments? Yep.
She describes a single of the various questions and profession that he maintains at this book heaven.
Yes.
Does that refer to that the Lord is in his position, there's no distinction, as far as this discovery, between what material works for?
He maintains Yeah, must be. He has no, because that's what this purport is specifically about. He has no favoritism towards one energy and not another.
In our first spirit, the other spirit, the one hand, it seems to be permanent to us, to the conditioned self.
And yes, and another, still another meaning could be, he maintains it as if it were permanent, meaning that, well, he creates it. He maintains it as if it was permanent, though it's not. Because one, you create something, and you saw it, and one is naturally very attached to it. And you never really consider that it's going to be destroyed. Otherwise, there's no impetus to create it. Yet Krishna creates it as if it's permanent. But then he destroys it and is completely detached. He's not attached to anything of the material world. So it's still another meaning. That's just the English. But I think the meaning that specifically was talked about is as he does the spiritual energy, it's they're all his energies, and there's no differentiation in his side from between the energies, in the same way that the government doesn't discriminate between, it gives money to the prison department and the welfare department, both the citizens, the inhabitants of both. Any other questions or comments? Okay, I think we'll only take one more class to finish this chapter. Glories to Srila Prabhupada, Lord Shiva, the Pachetas, Sri Krishna.